My high school chemistry teacher was something of a trickster, and ironically, his name was Mr. Edge. Mr. Edge, no fooling. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, and it was commonplace for the teachers there to contend with the adolescent male banter by dishing it right back, and Mr. Edge could dish it right back with the best of them. But he would go even a little bit further and always use the banter as an opportunity to teach us something as well. So, for example, to teach us about the chemical reality of pressure change, he would take test tubes, put a little bit of water in them, put a cork on the top, just loosely attached, and then from the Bunsen burner on his desk at the front of the room would heat up the water until the cork popped out and hit us on our tables around the room. Pressure change. It didn't hurt anybody, folks. No child was harmed, according to this. He would also conjure up these concoctions of fertilizer and soap and put the little bitty piece on filter paper and place them strategically on his desk, a declaration of don't touch. Because you see, fertilizer and soap, nitrogen and glycerin became nitroglycerin in a very unstable way and would pop like a firecracker if you messed with it some. He was painstakingly evasive when one of us would ask a question, but he would always try to tease in some opportunity that if you did the sleuth work, you could get the answer to your question. So once I asked him, Mr. Edge, should I use toluene or methyl alcohol to dissolve the compound in this experiment? And he looks back at me and says, well, what's the boiling point of water? Now, water had nothing to do with my question, but boiling point did, even though I didn't know it. And if I drilled down enough, I would learn, oh, he's telling me I got to know the boiling point of toluene and methyl alcohol to know which one it is. But his favorite was when we would ask a dual question or an either-or question. Mr. Edge, should I answer this question on the exam in units of moles or grams? And he would just get this devilish smile and say, yes. In all of this, I can look back on it now, decades later, and know he was teaching us a different kind of wisdom than just specific outright answers that he would give to us and then we would forget it again. He was inviting us to think in a different way, to understand from a different angle. And I believe that's what's happening in today's gospel. The people crowding around Jesus wanted a clear and convincing answer to their question, Jesus, are you the Messiah, the one who is to come? But Jesus answers them in cryptic words, using a wisdom that was different than what they could understand in their worldly sense. And to unpack this, it is helpful to catch the significance knowing it's in a particular setting. We're told very specifically that it's at the festival of the dedication, wintertime, and he's standing in the portico of Solomon in the temple. Now, there are huge implications in that one sentence, festival of the dedication in winter at the portico of Solomon in the temple. Because nearly 200 years before that day when Jesus stood there, another hero of the Jewish history, Judas Maccabeus, stood in the very same spot and rededicated the temple following his victory over the Greeks. And everyone who was standing with Jesus that day knew that on a particular day in the year 164 BCE, that the Greek king Antiochus Epiphanes had desecrated their beloved temple by killing several Jews there and mingling their blood on the altar and wiping it on the walls and on all the other accoutrements of worship and placed pagan signs and symbols all around. It had rendered the temple unusable for their worship of Yahweh. But then a miracle happens that takes 8 days to unfold, and the outnumbered Jewish rebels resoundingly defeat the stronger Greeks. This festival of the dedication is known as the Feast of Hanukkah today. today. Hanukkah. And so Jesus is standing in the very same spot where that other hero stood once before, Judas Maccabeus. And the people are asking him, are you the one who will defeat the Romans the way that Judas Maccabeus did with the Greeks? They want him to help them make sense of their situation, because the Roman oppressors were killing people by the thousands, and their burden of taxation left many hungry and some villages even starving to death. There seemed to be no end in sight. And so their plea goes up, help us, Jesus, if you are the one. Can you hear that plea in their question? Are you the one? But Jesus does not answer forthrightly in a way that gives them the answer outright. He demurs. He gives wisdom in a different way. He says, my ways are not your ways. My thoughts are higher than your thoughts. The Father and I are one. The Father and I are one. Those are scandalous words for all who were gathered there. And surely a collective gasp went up in that moment. But my friends, in our time, surely we can take a sense that there is so much unsettling news of tragedy and pain and hurting in our world that we can draw the comparisons directly from that day into ours and let those questions that they ask of Jesus that day be ours as well. Just this week, we have all this saber rattling that seems to be drawing us precipitously closer to another war in the Middle East in which there is no entry of ease or exit of ease. And we say, no, let's not do that. There is so much homelessness and hunger here in our own city that is bearing down on countless souls. And we say, we must find a different way. There are so many innocent people being killed by gun violence in this nation. This week, the 111th shooting in a school in this nation in the last 50 years. 111 shootings. And we say, this can't stand. And the list goes on, and our hearts are heavy. And we say, help us, Jesus. And amidst all the suffering, I will tell you folks, my prayers go up every single day for peace in this world and for wisdom for our leaders and for relief of those who are hurting and suffering. And yet little seems to change. And there are days, I will confess to you, that I fight against succumbing to the cynicism in the face of such tragedies. There are days when I find myself just numbed and disengaged so that I read the news and little reaction do I have, and then I move on. And that haunts me, folks. I don't know if you experience that in your life, but it stops me short. I don't want to do that. I want to be attuned to that suffering and respond to it. But sometimes I can't. But then I read passages of Scripture like these appointed for today, the fourth Sunday of Easter, and they bring it all back into focus for me. Two of the four readings. Did you know that two of the four readings that's appointed for today, Psalm 23 and the passage from Revelation, these are readings that are in our burial service. They are prescribed there because they are comforting words in times of loss. And yet we also get them here in our Easter season of celebration when we proclaim to the loudest voices of praise that all is not lost, that resurrection triumphs over death in the most surprising ways, even if we can't understand that resurrection wisdom full on this side of the grave. But we are invited to read these passages of Scripture with those who are suffering this day in mind and say, we are there with you. And we are proclaiming a God who is there with you too. We know they are deeply hurting and trying to make sense of it all. This beloved little 23rd Psalm that we sang a few moments ago, known as the Nightingale of all the Psalms, because it conjures up these beautiful, serene images of green grass and gently rolling streams of water and lambs being cared for by the shepherd. And the shepherd is the stuff of children's Sunday school, right? It's peaceful. It's tender. It's reassuring. And yet the shepherd makes no attempt to shy away from the valleys of the shadow of death. No, life with this shepherd is real. And even in the darkness, we are treated to the transcendent, the holy, the goodness and mercy of God. That little psalm, the 23rd, never answers the question, why? Why do so many awful things happen in our world? Why are lives so tragically and suddenly lost? Why do we live in a world where people across the globe and here in this nation and here in our city and 1,000 other places die regularly and senselessly? Why? Why? My friends, I don't believe that there is a direct answer to that question that will satisfy you or anyone when you are hurting. The 23rd Psalm offers great consolation, but nowhere does it explain an answer to the question, why? So how do we do this? How do we do this life? How do we do this life in this broken, hurting world as people of faith? Well, here's what I know. I know from spending much time with those who are ill or in crisis that I know what comforts and what doesn't. You know it too. Comfort does not come to those who are hurting. Comfort does not come from assurances that everything will be all right when they know it's not. Comfort does not come by simply waving the pain off as something being attributed to God's will. That's theologically bankrupt, friends. Don't do that. Don't do that. No, comfort comes when one chooses to sit alongside that person in her darkest hour. Comfort comes when a friend agrees to walk through the darkness with you. Comfort comes when two or three gather together and make the darkness holy and hold the space and the time for that first glimmer of light to break through as a gift. That's the Easter promise, my friends. That's the Easter promise around which we gather here week by week. This Messiah of ours chooses not to take shortcuts because he knows about the darkness. He knows about your darkness and mine. He has seen it. He has experienced it. And he has agreed to walk through those dark valleys with you, with me, with us all. This Messiah of ours is the same Lord who was crucified and yet rose again, wisdom that we don't fully understand, but we proclaim it. This Messiah is the same Lord who promised to redeem the world, to relieve its suffering in the fullness of time, to restore it to wholeness, to inaugurate a new creation. And folks, I'm going to stake my hope and claim on that. I need that hope in my life. I don't know how to do this without it. So our question lingers. Teacher, which is it? Are you our shepherd in darkness or in light? And the teacher turns to us with a smile and says, yes. Yes. Yes.